Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Armchair Ref podcast. I'm Michael.
And I'm Ben.
And we are absolutely delighted to get back into the swing of things. We took a bit of a break over the Christmas period. We kind of just got to spend time with family, loved ones, and watch some sport. And yeah, for other various reasons, we weren't able to film. But how have you been, Ben?
Yeah, I've been great. And thanks to all our viewers who have probably been gagging for this, to be honest. Like, I don't know the point. I've had a great time. You know, Christmas feels like a long time ago, but yeah, it was nice. I've been pretty much avoiding people since. So,
yeah. And I must say, though, yeah, I know we're joking about it, but I've heard, you know, from reliable sources, you know, people have been asking where the podcast's been. So, I mean, we're just giving the people what they want. That's what we plan to do from the beginning. So, well, that's what we'll continue to do.
Exactly. Although I've not had a single Welsh person ask me what's happened. And probably because they know they're about to get ruined today, but we'll save that for later.
So, yeah, like we said, it's been a bit of a time since we last filmed. So just to kind of get the juices flowing, we're just going to focus purely rugby, I think, this episode. Let's dig deep into it. The Six Nations documentary just came out. And, you know, it's been some time now. It seemed to have quite a lot of success. So I'm just keen to hear what your thoughts were, Ben.
Yeah, we're going full Gogglebox talking about the thing we watched. So
I hate Gogglebox. I don't like that we've become like that. So, but carry on.
I think it's been good, you know. I've enjoyed the stories. I think they picked some pretty cool players to talk through. I think my thought on it is it's a good start. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed it, but I think next year maybe it'll be better. Hopefully more access. Maybe like a bit more rugby in it. Do you know what I mean? If you're an avid rugby fan, it's not like all or nothing rugby. But
yeah.
That's my overview. I enjoyed it.
So what, I know you say, you know, you want more rugby, but what does that actually look like? Like, what are you personally, you know, hoping for to kind of see in the next season?
Yeah, I feel like I want to see some like training stuff. Maybe some just like a bit more like big hits and like beautiful little skillful moves. Just when someone does something saucy, you just
needs a bit more spice. Is that what you're trying to say?
Dip your nuggets right into that sauce. I think that's what I'm saying.
No, I get you. I hear you. I think I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. I obviously enjoy that type of content, you know, a good sports documentary in particular, this being the first, well, not the first, but, you know, this is like the biggest documentary we've kind of had. You know, there's been stuff on that Rugby Pass, the Springboks have done like Chasing the Sun. There's Two Sides, which was the British and Irish Lions tour to South Africa. Australian rugby team have just come out with their one. I forgot what it's called. But anyway, like I said, I think it's a step in the right direction. We know that as a sport, we've been struggling. And this is a way to kind of put our face on the map in terms of world sport to kind of, you know, reach out to new viewers. In saying that, I don't think they did quite a good enough job at appealing to the casual fan. And what I mean by that, like when you think about Drive to Survive, which was the series that pioneered this type of documentary series, it was very easy for fans to watch that first season and then go and watch an F1 race and kind of know what's happening. Yeah. And, you know, I know I haven't watched it all myself. I know F1 is very technical, but it is very much, you know, race day is, you know, who's finishing the laps the most, you know, in the quickest time. But I feel that you could, if you hadn't watched rugby before and you watched that documentary, like rugby wasn't explained to you, like the odd, like scrum and more, but I just don't think, you know, a casual or a new fan could watch that documentary and come watch this Six Nations and know exactly what was going on.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think part of me thinks like realistically, and like no disrespect to F1 because I do like a bit of F1, but like they're just driving around circles trying to go faster than each other, right? Like, there's more nuance to it, but like it's a pretty simple concept. And I think rugby is a little bit more complicated in terms of like, oh, you can do this, but you can't do that. What they maybe need to do a little bit more is just like capture those big moments, like all the big hits and big pieces of skill, stuff that like just gets fans flowing, or like a big scrum engage with some intense music behind it. Because if people want to watch it, they can learn the rules, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay. All right. I hear your argument. I just think, I mean, personally, I love like the like you said earlier, the nuances of the sport. So I think that's what makes it enjoyable for me. So I get it. But yeah, I agree. Like the whole thing is all about storylines and, you know, what's going to like capture the audience. So I think you're right. We do need to focus more on that. But I think for a first effort, it was really good. I think it was a good first effort. I thought it was beautifully shot, really well edited. And like as you said, I think yeah, just getting an insight into those players that were selected was really good.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how good was Seb Negri? What a guy.
Yeah, crazy. I think yeah, I think his you know what, actually I would argue that Stephen Varney was even better. Like I like to kind of like see how like the mental side of like making mistakes and how he's seen like a sports psychologist. So I thought I enjoyed that, but I agree that Negri and the way he kind of way he like, wired and how he like gears himself up for game day was yeah a really cool insight.
Yeah, but give it a watch, basically. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, you know what, I actually so I know we can move on to the other Six Nations, but I thought was really unfortunate is that obviously like they had Farrell in there, they had DuPont, they had Louis-Riel-Samet, you know, those key players like Johnny Sexton. So, and then, you know, these big names, but then like you come to now watch this year's Six Nations, you know, which, you know, the viewers of the show hopefully translate to the actual sport now, then they're those names aren't, you know, there anymore. And it's obviously completely out of their control. It's just a bit unfortunate.
Yeah, it's true. But it's exciting at the same time. Like, who's going to be next? And some of these guys' replacements are looking pretty handy, I'm going to be honest.
Oh, okay. So tell me more. Segue us into the next section.
Yeah, I mean, Jack Crowley, I think, is the main one. Johnny Sexton's replacement. He's been looking
Yeah.
pretty good. Like, he's slotted straight in.
I agree. And I mean, he's only had what, like a handful of caps already. And if he's looking that comfortable with two or three under his belt, imagine what he'll be like. You
Yeah.
know, when he's got like 50. But you know what? This is going to be a particularly niche reference, but like the Green Bay Packers have had back to back and potentially to back amazing quarterbacks. Like they just get the quarterback pick right, and then they have that person for like 20 years. We cannot allow Ireland to have Ronan O'Gara, then followed by Johnny Sexton and then Jack Crawley.
But, right, a perfect analogy. All of these people have sat and learned their trade behind someone. Do you know what I mean? It's not like they've just thrown them in. Like, Rodgers was there for like 4 years before he started.
Yeah.
It's the same with Crowley. Like, he's been about a while. He's been in and around the squad. Like, for a new cap, he's not like he's 20, 21. And he's obviously learned from these guys, and he's got that emotional maturity. I think there's something to be said for it.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, he's been in those big moments at Munster. Like, you know, they just won the URC last year. So, you know, they've got what it takes. And I feel like the culture that they're building over in Munster is like amazing. I think when you think of club Irish rugby, everybody's first thought goes to Leinster, and rightly so. You know, they've had so much dominance, you know, in what was the Pro 14 and then also in Europe. But Munster are, you know, they're right up there, and you know, they have done some phenomenal things recently.
Yeah, they're like, imagine Leinster if they didn't bottle it. Like, that is Munster.
Yeah, that's pretty spot on.
But yeah, I mean, Ireland, to be fair, kind of talking about them a bit more. Like, first two games, they've just looked so comfortable. I think is probably the way to say it. They haven't looked challenged. Things have kind of just been working for them. They've scored points. They look unbelievable, which is impressive considering as they had a big knock in the World Cup, not making it past the quarterfinals, which doesn't do well for their street cred, but yeah, they've come back strong.
Yeah, absolutely. And I saw a crazy stat that so since Andy Farrell took over as head coach, they have won 31 out of 34 games. like since then, which is just like an unbelievable record. And I think all three of them, like one was away in New Zealand in their test series down in New Zealand. And another one was away from home, and then the other one was at the World Cup. So yeah, they're building a fortress, over there in Dublin. So yeah, you know what, I think I'll be interested to hear what you think about this, but I was almost worried for Ireland, post World Cup. And seeing how strong they were in the Six Nations, they didn't have too many like new players on the scene. Like let's say the forwards, for example, the exception of Joe McCarthy, who's kind of lingering around the side, is very much the same. And I feel like this is a time, like take England, for example, new squad, younger people building for 2027. And I was a little bit worried that Ireland are almost going for immediate success post-World Cup failure to kind of win back hearts and to kind of show everybody that, they're still worth their salt.
Part of that is some of their players in especially in that pack are actually not that old. Think of like Caelan Doris, who's been around. Like Van der Flier is not like exceptionally old. Like they could make another World Cup. Because there's very few Irish regions, there's not that many players to pick. So if you want to pick someone young, they almost have to usurp the international at club level. Or move region and play somewhere else. But as we're saying, most of the picks kind of come from those top two teams, like Leinster and Munster. So I think, yeah, they're training and they must breed some absolute animals. And then when they break free, they're just Ireland ready.
So you think that they've kind of, as we talked earlier about with Jack Crowley, you think they've perfected this system of allowing the young players to kind of sit behind the starters and develop until they're ready to kind of, almost there's no lag in quality of the first team. They're just ready to kind of take over when somebody's injured or retire.
Yeah, and I think that is pretty impressive. I don't think everyone can do it. I think it takes like some real skill to kind of keep people motivated, especially when there's kind of big money elsewhere. But if you can keep these young guys, they're obviously gonna get battle hardened, and it's working so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think let's look on the other side of things now. So Ireland have managed to have two convincing wins, one against France in the opening night, and then one against Italy. I mean, we were expecting Italy. We can come on to them later. But let's kind of review France over the past 2 weeks. How would you kind of rate their performance so far?
I've been disappointed in France. I thought they were like nailed on for the Six Nations. I mean, the last couple of years, it's basically been France or Ireland. Whoever plays at home against the other one wins. They came to Paris first night and just didn't really fire a shot. But
They got walloped. Let's not put it nicely. They got absolutely hammered.
yeah, and it's almost like obviously Dupont's not there, but it's not. Yeah, that's not 38 points of Dupont like being conceded. It's almost like their heads have gone down after the World Cup, where everyone was expecting them to do something special. But yeah, that's disappointing. And then they scraped a win against Scotland, and didn't look particularly convincing in that either. I feel like they're going to come good when they kind of get over themselves, but
When they play England, do you
I know they're going to beat England. I'm going to be chatting. They're gonna slap us up. I don't know. Hopefully they can find their form, because I just love watching them play when they're there. But so far, no good.
No good. Okay. I think for me, well, actually, before I say my thoughts, if who do you think suffered the most from their quarterfinal exit? Like, who do you think had more to who had more to lose in the World Cup? Was it Ireland, who's pretty much like invincible, sorry, and were world number one for so long, having won the Grand Slam previously, first test win in New Zealand ever, and then, or was it France, home nation, young players on the up? What do you think?
I think it's France, in front of your own fans. And I think The referee made some interesting calls, so they're probably still hung up on that. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not into it, but I think they're probably quite hard done by in that game. But yeah, and I just don't think they've gotten over it. And then losing your best player as well, that's got hurt too. So yeah. But
I think,
was the
oh,
Ireland?
sorry, go on.
I was gonna say obviously Ireland are affected too, but yeah, where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I think I would agree. I think there's nothing worse than, nothing worse than losing a home World Cup. I just think that was, particularly with all the hype that the French have had, in the past couple of years. Yeah, I think they had the team to do it. I would have backed them to beat England if they had they beaten, South Africa in the quarterfinal. I think they've almost been hit with a double whammy. They lost to Pont and they lost the World Cup, and that would take such mental resolve to kind of just put behind them and then focus forward. Just like the physical fatigue and also just the mental fatigue, I'm sure. There just comes a lot of pressure, putting on that shirt and representing. We all know about how the French love their rugby. I also think that a lot of the focus has been how Dupont isn't in the team anymore. And don't get me wrong, in exceptional, once in a generation talent, and he is, le petit général for them. Like, he commands everything. I do think, however, they are missing Ntamack as well. I feel like they're missing that connection, and I feel like Ntamack doesn't actually get mentioned quite a lot now because Jalibert is also an exceptional 10. But I think he's actually such an important cog in that machine, and also that, that connection between Dupont and Ntamack, that he doesn't really get spoken as much.
Yeah, I know it's harsh, isn't it? Like, he is unreal. And especially, yeah, some of the games that he's been playing in, like, especially Autumn Internationals previous to World Cup, it was like, wow, like, he's so good. But hype trains past him, like, he got injured.
That is ruthless.
He'll come back and the hype will come back. But yeah, I think they definitely missed him as well.
I must say as well, because I was obviously at the France Scotland game. I was fortunate enough to go to it, and I was secretly rooting for France. Don't let too many people hear that. But I just love the French flair. I love how they play. It's attacking. It's passionate. And I was bitterly disappointed. It was like the first live game I kind of came away from, and I was like, I didn't enjoy that particularly. I mean, the second half was just, it was atrocious. And obviously there was a very questionable call at the end, but we can kind of come into that when we talk about Scotland later. But I think, I don't know whether it's just everybody else is kind of, on the up, and France kind of haven't had that mental regain that everybody else has had, following their defeats at the World Cup. But they just somehow are clawing these victory, well, the one victory. But I wouldn't be surprised if they lose another one in the next coming weeks.
To be fair, they've had probably the most difficult start out of everyone to the competition, playing Ireland, who are just unbelievable, and then Scotland, who realistically should be up there. But I mean, we're coming on to them. What is going on with them, Mike? Why can't they put a second half together?
I have no idea what's going on. I really don't. They looked incredible in that first half against Wales. I mean, going 27-0 up at half time is pretty unheard of. Like, I'm pretty sure Ireland didn't go 27-0 up against Italy last weekend. So, that is some hiding. And maybe winning is just, so outwith their DNA that when it actually happened at half time, they're like, what do we do?
It really does feel like they just don't know what to do. My only thought is either Gregor Townsend is like the worst halftime team talker in the world. Like they've accidentally switched out their like mid-game coffee for decaf. Like that's all I can think. Like what's going
Yeah,
on?
honestly, I have no idea what it is. And you know what, actually, I'm just going to quickly interject at this point. Co-captains is a terrible concept. It shouldn't be allowed, in my opinion. I think it's utterly ridiculous because, as we know, captains are the only people that are, the refs are supposed to talk to, and that's, the main channel. If you have two, then does that mean two of them can go speak to the ref? That is put at a disadvantage to the one captain of the opposition. I'm not a fan. You can't have co-captains and then a vice captain. No, that's ridiculous. One captain, one vice captain. End of.
Authoritarian, like this is my guy, he's gonna be captain. Everyone else needs to pipe down.
It really got to me. I just don't like it at all.
Yeah, but I'm gonna say something that I feel like Scottish people aren't gonna like, but Gregor Townsend is just I just can't don't think he's the long-term answer.
Ooh, okay.
He's had up and down years, right? I'm not saying he's been rubbish, like he's had some good years, but I think consistently over the time he's been coach has been like some of the they've been the golden generation or whatever, some of the best players they've had come through, and like they've not won anything. Like they've had some great individual games and some great individual halves in this Six Nations. Like it's almost like there's this they just don't have that killer instinct, and they just need like maybe he should be an attack coach, and there should just be some guy who just I don't know what it is. It's like some mental fit challenge blocking them.
So do you attribute their lack of success to Gregor Townsend rather than the players?
Well, I think you've got a point somewhere, right? And generally, you point at the top unless there's a reason not to. I think all of the players are very good. And they're playing well for their clubs at the minute. I think like the club's doing pretty well in like Europe and stuff. At which point, like you just have to think like, what is it that's not making them put things to bed? Because they can do it.
I don't know what's happening. I think I'm also going to say something quite controversial here. I alluded to it earlier, the very controversial call right at the end of the game. A Scotland player went over the line, and there were questions as to whether the ball was grounded or not. And obviously, the implications were quite big because whoever, that result of that decision was determining the winner of the match. My opinion on the topic is Scotland should not be angry at one decision that holds the fate of the game in their hands. They were in such a position where they should have scored more points. It should not, if you are in a position where in the dying moments of the game that you've got to hope that the ref, go blows in your favor. You weren't putting yourself in a position to actually win that game. Go back to Ireland, South Africa in the World Cup. You know how when Ben O'Keefe ran around the other side of the mall where he couldn't see that ball coming out. South Africa needed to be way more clinical in the red zone to get to, to get to to score a try. Scotland do the same thing. How many times, why are they not going out wide and trying to just score? Why are they trying to do pick and goes where they know if they get held up, then that's game over? It needed to be certain. So I think Scotland should have won that game before that decision.
Yeah, I'm with you. And controversially, I A think it was a try, but I B agree with the referee's decision entirely.
I completely agree with you. I
Yeah.
100% agree.
Okay, so I think it was a try. Had he said, "Is there a reason I can't award the try?" Like that's given. But he put himself in the best possible position. He couldn't see. And like obviously there was something within him saying held up. So he's got to go with his gut. I mean, if it was England, I'd be raging.
Sure.
But I'm going to back the ref on this one. I think fair play. There was conclusive evidence it was grounded, but you couldn't see the line.
I think this is where the TMO needs to be a bit sharper because I couldn't hear obviously the dialogue in the stadium, but haven't watched it since. There just seems to be too much backtracking. Like Nick Berry and the TMO both at one point say, so it is a try. and then somehow like managed to talk themselves out of it. And again, I think this is where we need to be really clear on like who is the alpha in that conversation. Like, I know that the ref is going to make the final decision, but do you know what I mean? Like that power dynamic, it almost like confused things in that moment. Like Nick Berry's gone to them saying, "What do you think?" And then the TMO's been like, "Well, what do you think?" And it's just someone needs to just like put their foot down and be like, "Okay, I can't see it, therefore it's not a try." Or TMO being like, "Look, there is this evidence of the ball on the line. Bang, here you go."
It's mad. It is mad. But I think there were harsh decisions both ways. I think when you think of like Van der Merwe's seatbelt tackle, which wasn't the seatbelt tackle, and then when he intercepted it, he was offside. I was like, what's going on here?
See, I've seen two things about this. So I agree. I thought that was horrendous, like the seatbelt tackle, and I thought it was offside as well. But because I think he might not have been offside because there was no ruck. It was just a tackle at that point. So there was no one from France that actually made contact with the defender. So therefore he could be wherever he wanted to be.
I can't remember this off the top of my head. I have a feeling someone tripped up on him trying to get there, which is pretty
Oh,
odd.
really?
But I could have made that up, so I'm not gonna. I mean, in fact, I'm not.
So you won't speak too much.
But yeah, I
Okay.
yeah, I thought they were, you know, harsh the other way, but like it's just the way the cookie crumbles, isn't it? Like you can't
Yeah.
blame them. Unless you're
And
England.
look, France got the win at the end of the day anyway. So anyway, right, let's move on. Do you want to go to England next?
Yeah, I think when we look at England, we've got to think like this is the third best team in the world at the minute. And they've continued to assert dominance on the opposition with two wins out of two. So as a fan, I'm pretty happy.
See, I know you're laughing and you seem joking, but I know in your heart you fully believe it as well, which is the most infuriating part.
Just saying, the grandstand's still on. Until we play Scotland, it's still on.
Lord, I hope you don't get a grand slam. That'd be horrific. Oh man. Oh, it's gonna come down to the final weekend, isn't it?
Right, I'm saying it now. I think England have got like one big game in them, and I think it'll be against Scotland or against Ireland.
Yeah, okay. So you think that means France are gonna, if France is gonna be a walkover for you guys?
Well, I don't know about that. Was like I think that was 50-50. If they play how they've played, I think we'll beat them. But if they actually turn up, I think they'll smash us. I don't think
Okay, okay.
we'll put in a big performance. So it's just what happens with them.
Wow, you've got actually a pretty tough run in. You've got Scotland, France, and then Ireland. That's pretty heavy.
Yeah, but I'm kind of happy with the way it's worked because that it's been quite a big change in the squad, like new defensive system, which is actually all right. When we've given up plays, they've been big plays. It's just like learning the system, right? It's like someone's rushed up and left a big gap. And when
And
that
just to kind of say what defensive system is that?
it's a blitzing system, Mike. And
And
Jones.
implemented by who previously?
A great bloke called Felix Jones was running it and big fan.
It was also a back-to-back Springbok coach, just to let you know. Just to let you know.
You know, those big gaps are not going to be there when it's been going a while. So I'm pretty happy, and it's going to turn our defense into a weapon, which is cool. And then in attack, we're trying more things. Like you can see the players' skill sets are expanding. Like you think about Freddie Stewart, like he's been a high ball monster and a crash ball monster, but like he's made nice passes and like general direction's pretty good. You know, some nice wins, nice confidence. It's going all right.
Yeah, I agree. I think post World Cup, if there was ever like for everybody that lost, which is everybody but South Africa, I think England were the best losers, if that makes sense. Because like I think of New Zealand, again, quite an old squad. And they fell short. They're gonna have to think about who of that group is making it another 4 years. Whereas England, they had low expectation. Well, they obviously thought they could win it, but they had lower expectations in my eyes. They were a new coach, new team, It was very much touch and go. And to come out third is actually pretty good going. And now I feel like they are in the prime position to build on their success in going into 2027. So yeah, I would agree. I think they look quite good for the future.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point to stress, like for the future. Like, I don't think we're setting the world alight now, but I also think we're probably not as bad as people say we are. Like, everyone's like, oh, Italy, you know, there was kind of 3 points in it, but like right at the end, we're on their line. They went to the length of the pitch to score. It could have been like a 17-point game, all saying how good we were. So it's just those small margins, and hopefully we turn into Ireland and don't regress to Scotland with that killer instinct.
That it is definitely what Scotland are missing. So yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. I do think that England need to polish their performances a bit more, though. I think, their opening weekend against Italy, they didn't look particularly great in that first half. And they did manage to claw away back just about. And then again, you're running extremely close against Wales. Like, they're not pretty performances. So I think, as we saw with like the end of Eddie Jones's tenure, yeah, it's great looking towards the future and saying you've got this plan, but you also need to have, I know they are winning, which is almost the annoying thing. Like, they need to have short-term success to then allow everybody to buy in for future success.
I think that winning is so important, like clawing your way to a victory, even like that Wales game, which impact, to be fair, both games, like we won by small margins, and it's an art to do that in itself. So I'm kind of happy. And I also think both of those teams are better than their perception. I think Italy have come and played, and I actually think it was just like silly handling errors that kept them at nil against Ireland. I mean, look at that second half Wales had against Scotland. Like, it's not as if neither team is anywhere. So, I don't know. I think we'll just have to see how it goes.
You're in for your big test now in the next upcoming 3 weeks. And I think that'll be a really good marker for you, because you're gonna have to, if you want to do the Grand Slam, then you're gonna have to put in three back-to-back-to-back incredible performances. So it'll be interesting to see how you go. But let's move on to Wales, because I think that is also, a really good team to kind of talk about. Obviously, they nearly clawed their way back to beat Scotland in the first week, scoring 26 unanswered points in the second half. And they were leading against you guys until like 8 minutes to go. So what's going wrong for Wales, and what's going right?
Oh, I mean, for a team that have to get their nappies changed at half time, like they're looking so good. I mean, okay, that first half against Scotland, like Scotland looked good, but Wales also looked pretty bad. Oh, I think there's something there. I think there is something there for the future. Daffy Jenkins is a hell of a captain. And I've not really been that impressed with him in games I'd seen him before this, but like when you see some of his stats, like his rucks hit and what phenomenal. You know, I'm not the first person to say this, and I'm almost jumping on the bandwagon, but I think it was just like Euan's Lloyd's inexperience that cost Wales the match at the weekend.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
but like he's barely had any starts at 10. Like even at Bristol, he was coming on at the wing and stuff. So like if he keeps playing, he could be someone special, and they've got some good young players. So yeah, I mean their back row is just ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. And it could even be better.
Yeah, Jack
But we're
Morgan.
thinking of Jack Morgan. He's not even there at the moment.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm like a quiet sleeper on Wales. I think I'd love to give them to get a win against that France, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay. Yeah.
What do you think?
There's so much potential. And I just think they're almost like, I want to say like a month behind England. Like, I think that's, where they are. And I just think that, like you said, they haven't found those victories, which just does so much for morale and, just the passion for the game, and it just makes everybody's job a bit easier because you are still winning at that point. So because they haven't had that success yet, they are just not quite at the level that England are. But I think the situations are actually quite similar in terms of you've got still some old heads in the team, but then you're trying to blood these young guns that are supposed to be your future. I think, yeah, they've shown the resolve, like to nearly come back and beat Scotland was, phenomenal. And to almost be, the third best, I'm going to put in air quotations, the third best team in the world.
Wait, I'm quoting that from you.
yeah, I think they are. I actually think their situation highlights how important the number 10 position is. That we've seen that, England's success could be attributed to George Ford keeping hold of the 10 shirt, and them being able to steer the ship. Jack Crowley
Oh, yeah.
coming in but being level-headed, has allowed Ireland to not miss a beat. And I think, yeah, there was just that playing too much in their own 22 cost them, the try when they were down against 13 men. Like, that is just inexcusable. Like, that should not have been how they wanted to play in that area of the pitch. So again, they're just going through growing pains in a really key position. Like, Sam Costello, he threw that late intercept against Argentina in the World Cup. So I think they need to find their footing post Dan Biggar. And once they do, I think that allows them to have growing pains elsewhere. But if you give the 10 some, if they can have a solid 10, doesn't have to be world class, but if they can just have someone who's reliable, then that just allows them to have a good platform going forward.
I kind of feel harsh, like absolutely digging it out, like when they went for it in their 22 against 13 men, because realistically, if that had come off, I would have been unreal. And like, that's the kind of thing that New Zealand would have done. And everyone would have said it was unreal. But because it's Wales, it's not ideal.
No, I agree. I agree. So I think that kind of let's wrap it up with talking about the fan favorite team, Italia.
Yeah.
And my heart breaks for them because I do generally feel like they're always on the cusp, and you always feel like this is the year where they could maybe win more than one game. But they've also just been dealt a terrible hand with so many injuries now as well that I feel like they were just getting into the groove of things, and now they can't.
Like, I reckon they win against France next weekend.
Really?
I'm calling it. I'm calling it Italy to beat France. I love them. They've got some quality players. I mean,
Yeah.
Lewis Lyon is going to be playing for the next weekend, probably as well.
Crazy.
Yeah. Sounds like anyone who's eaten spag bols off to Italy. That's not mine. I stole that. I saw that meme on the internet. Let me laugh. Let me laugh,
I
sorry.
wouldn't have known. I thought it could have come from you. I
Yeah.
really could.
But I couldn't lie to the masses, so I think they could do something against this France team. They've done it before.
When did they do it before?
They've beaten France before. I mean, it was a while ago, but
Yeah, I don't even remember that. But this is the thing. I just think they've. Because did you see that Thomas Allen is having a break from international rugby?
yeah.
So he's now not there. Negri's injured. Kanone's injured. I just think that those are like the big names. Those are the guys that make a dent and actually, create great things for them.
Yeah, and I think you're probably right, but I also just think like last week, if when people made a break and offloads went to hands, like they could have scored a couple of tries. And that would have been as good, if not a better showing than France put up against Ireland. But those errors let them down. But they want to play, which is why people love them. And I get this feeling every year about them, so maybe I
Yeah,
should.
this is what I'm going to say. Like, those handling errors happen every year, or there are a couple of missed passes, drop balls from, scoring these tries that puts them in contention. So I'm just fed up. I actually want them to kind of string something together.
Yeah.
And I think we are in their in the beginning of their golden generation, like the Italian under 20s team nearly beat the Ireland under 20s team in the Six Nations. It was like a point difference. So I do think that there is a generation of players coming or are here, but I don't want to be, selling false promises, of hope. So it'll be really interesting to see how they go against Wales, and Scotland. No, not yeah, and Scotland. So, and yeah, to see if they can actually, string those good performances together. So, and obviously they just had a change in leadership as well. So they're also going to go through, learning new systems, and yeah, but I think they've got no expectations. They have this. They should have this freedom to just play.
Exactly, that's it. They can just play. And you might not want to sell hopes and dreams, but I'm going to sell hopes and dreams. Like, it's literally for us next weekend. And that's how I'm going to kick off. How do we think the matches next weekend are going to go? Italy to beat France by 2 points, is what I'm saying.
Nah, it ain't happening. Not a chance. I don't think France are gonna hammer them as much as we think they will, because yeah, I think that win against Scotland almost is gonna reinforce bad habits. I don't think it's gonna be a wake-up call. So I'm gonna say France by 12.
Oof, big. And then Scotland, England at Murrayfield. What are you saying, Mike? You're the voice of reason.
Man, I think this is actually so hard to call. Like, I actually don't know. Can I say a draw? Just be boring.
Oh, so boring. And to be fair, you never get draws in rugby. It's quite exciting.
No, I'll talk you through why I'm struggling.
All right.
The Calcutta Cup has been won by Scotland for the past 3 years, maybe even more than that,
Yeah.
if I remember. So there's that. Scotland are going to come out absolutely enraged that they lost against France, and they feel like they deserve to win. So they will be desperately trying to get the win. But England just have this pesky act about them where they just don't go away and they find a way to win, no matter how pretty or ugly it is. And they've also got the confidence of things are starting to click together now. They can win close games. They can come from behind against Italy. So I'm gonna go Scotland. Scotland by one.
What, because of,
Because my girlfriend's Scottish.
yes, my move. It's like, look, if you were going to say about the last 3 years, I mean, on Tuesday I had pancakes for dinner. I'm not having pancakes tomorrow, Mike. Like, do you know what I mean?
Fair enough.
But to be fair, saying that, I mean, look, Scotland at home, all the pressure is on them. Like the crowd and England are still implementing new systems. Scotland have pretty much the exact same team as like last year and the World Cup. They should win. They should win. But I just
So
don't.
you're just trying to put all the pressure on Scotland.
Yeah, I'm not sure the Scottish team will be listening. So like getting in their heads. But I think England are gonna win. I think that mental resilience that has been kind of enforced into them and that lack of in Scotland. Do you know what I mean? I think Scotland should win, but I don't think they will. So
Yeah,
England.
I think that's fairly reasonable. I think this is going to be the game of the weekend.
Yeah.
I think they should be pretty neck and neck. I don't expect it to be a blowout from either side. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that game. And obviously I'm going to be fortunate enough to go to that one as well. So
Yeah.
I'll yeah, well I might have to just shout some negative comments. No, we're not going to do that. We're not shouting abuse, but yeah, I will be supporting Scotland from the stands
Yeah.
proudly.
Yeah, just make sure you take some tissues for your girlfriend so
Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up. The last game will be Ireland v Wales.
yeah.
I think this one's pretty straightforward to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think Ireland could crack 50 in this game.
Oh, by that much.
Well, I'd not win by 50, but I think they'd like
Sorry,
hit 50
yeah,
points.
I meant just kind of like total score. Wow.
Yeah.
Even though they couldn't put 50 past Italy.
I think this Wales team will be it. Oh no, this Italian team will beat Wales.
Okay. I do think it will be beating. I think it's going to be by, I'm going to say 18. I don't think it's going to be, I don't know they'll put 50 on though.
Yeah.
I think Wales have got that dog in them, and the dog,
Yeah,
it
they
means they
really
don't
have.
get beaten, like smashed heavily, but
They fight until the end, to be fair. I mean, if it was in Wales, I'd probably say lower, but in Dublin.
yeah, like I said, it's a fortress. 31 out of 44, 34 games is a
Yeah.
pretty good record.
Exactly. So yeah, I think that kind of rounds out next weekend.
Yeah, good. It's a good start. It's nice to have a bit of a break in between. So yeah, thanks everybody for listening. We hope you enjoyed us coming back. I know you've been only wanting it. But yeah,
And
let us know your or say again, sorry, Ben.
gonna say, and if you didn't enjoy us coming back, then just don't tune in. Like, it's pretty
Yeah,
easy.
don't yeah, we don't want you here. We only want our loyal fans. That really sounded very close to OnlyFans. We would love to hear your predictions of what the next 3 weeks are going to look like, who's going to win it at the end. And also let us know what you want us to talk about on the pod. We didn't even touch on the Super Bowl, which is
No.
very unlike us, but we're not going to save that for right now.
That's it.
But yeah, I'm excited for where the podcast is going to go.
Exactly. Viva Las Vegas.
And on that note, we'll see you next week. Thank you very much.